everybody. Hope you're having a great holiday season so far. Welcome to our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, this week's edition. I am Hub Arkish, along with our managing editor, Arthur Arkish, and we're here to talk some Chicago Bears football with you for the next 20, 25 minutes or so. And it's kind of a different feeling this week, Arthur. They are coming off literally their best performance of the season. It is ironic because, you know, people immediately want to either jump on the Mitch Trubisky train or the Jordan Howard Express or the Tariq Cohen train. But the reality is that what happened in Cincinnati last weekend is, A, the Bengals, you know, fielded their B team. They were beat up as could be. But beyond that, Dow Loggins gave the Bears offense a game plan that they could work with, a game plan that could exploit what they did well, exploit what was missing from Cincinnati, and they exploded for over 480 yards, something you don't see from Bears teams very often.
Yeah, it's amazing, Hub, how, you know, pounding inside with Jordan Howard actually frees up the edges to get your speedy playmakers and the guys that can do damage out there in positions to succeed. So, you know, we've spent a lot of podcast space, if you will, kind of telling it like it is with Dow Loggins. I think he's been a little bit in over his head. And at the same time, I think it's only fair to acknowledge that this was all very new to him and the rest of the Bears coaching staff too. So maybe it shouldn't have taken 13 weeks. And I do believe it was too little too late. But maybe we gloss over that a little bit, that there was a familiarity for everyone here in trying to learn how to assimilate all these new weapons. It is exciting when it works, which we finally got to see last week.
You know, it's interesting though, Arthur. I work with some retired Bears, some all-time great retired Bears every weekend doing pre- and post-game shows at the Score radio station and in visiting with Olin Krutz and Patrick Manley and Big Cat Williams. One of the things that is their biggest criticism, I think is a fair way to put it, of where the Bears are at right now is knowing where this team was at offensively, knowing that it was going to be a complete rebuild with youth, and hiring Loggins last year, and then the changes that were made after last year to this year's staff, and bringing in all young coaches, some like Zach Azani at wide receiver, with no NFL experience whatsoever, and having nobody on that staff with any play-calling experience. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, Dow Loggins is in charge, and he's going to be the first one to go, or should be, but the whole staff was conceived poorly, you know, I believe, on the offensive side, and that's very unusual for a John Fox team.
You took the words out of my mouth. That's a little ironic, too, because that has been known as one of Fox's strengths, both identifying the right coordinators and assistants and then delegating for them. So, yeah, you know, I totally understand it, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here. I know we try and draw a lot of parallels with the Eagles and the Rams, but let's do it just one more time. Part of the beauty of having John DeFilippo and all the success he's had with Carson Wentz is an experienced guy like Frank Reich. Part of the beauty of what Matt LaFleur has been able to do with Jared Goff is having Greg Olsen there as well. So I think that it's there has to be a nice balance between guys who've done it before and the young up-and-comers that you're so excited about. And this is just all things to keep in mind as we seemingly inch closer to a coaching reboot. But Hub, let me ask you, is it absolutely too late for everyone? What if the Bears did rattle off three more victories? I'm not predicting. I don't think it's going to happen. But what if the Bears ended the season at 7-9? Does that change the conversation for John Fox? I would think it might.
I don't think you can rule out that possibility. You know, with all of the reports that people hear and read and see everywhere, nobody is claiming to have it from Ryan Pace, that
right,
he has made up his mind as to exactly what he's going to do. I think what's gotten one of John Fox's biggest mistakes is going out of his way to develop this I don't know what to call it. It's not a good relationship with the media. And not that the media should have any input into this or have any responsibility, but we are the channel for information to Bears fans and Bears nations and the way this thing is going to be viewed. And when you go out of your way to make the media the enemy, and we see this in a lot of what's going on in our life right now, you know, you're probably not going to get publicized and reported on the way you want to. And so, you know, I don't say that the media wants John Fox fired, but they're not going to give him the benefit of the doubt. From where Ryan Pace sits, if you had a 3-13 football team last year and you go 7-9 this year and the offense is firing on all cylinders the last 3-4 weeks of the season, and, you know, the defense is a different unit when Danny Trevathan's on the football field. We'll talk about that in a minute. I suppose you could make the argument for Fox. Now, I don't know that you can't the problem is you can't bring the staff back intact. If you don't make a change on offense, then Ryan Pace becomes the problem, and there's no way he's going to overcome that. So let's say he wanted to keep John Fox but hire a new offensive staff. Well, then you've got to extend Fox by at least a year, because if he's going into the last year of his contract, you know, he's not going to be able to get the best talent to come in and coach the offensive side of the football. And so you've kind of created a bit of a trap for yourself if you're Ryan Pace. And I think that's why the assumption is that Fox has to go, because he knows he can't stand pat on offense. And how does he fix half of it if he keeps Fox?
Right. If you listen to this podcast, you know Hub's feeling certainly about the kind of premise in the NFL that a coach can't enter a lame duck season. Hub thinks it's silly. Player contracts aren't guaranteed. Coaching contracts, why should they be any different? But you did lay out one point. If the assistants fall under lame duck status, then that kind of can potentially create a sticky situation. And once again, I think we're both still thinking that the odds are certainly stacked against John Fox, but kind of one more thing to consider in this equation. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. Ryan Pace doesn't strike me as someone who is going to be so aggressive at the quarterback position finally, and then kind of side with his so conservative head coach heading into a fourth year together.
Well, and Arthur, here's the other issue that you've got to deal with is Vic Fangio's contract is up.
Right.
And if you bring Fox back as a lame duck without an extension, I'm not saying Fangio wouldn't come back with Fox, but he is going to be highly sought after. He's a free agent at this point. And so even if he doesn't get a head coaching opportunity, every team that is building a new staff would want to talk to a Vic Fangio as their defensive coordinator. So to bring back Fox but have them lose both coordinators, I don't know that that makes any sense. And so it's just it looks to me like it's a bad situation that has developed for John Fox. And we cannot forget that even if he wins out, he's still 16-32 as the head coach of the Chicago Bears over a three-year stretch. And that's just not a great argument to bring him back.
And he still took until the fourth quarter of his third season to potentially, I mean, we'll see if it's even sustainable. We'll see what it looks like at Ford Field Saturday. But to get away from, at least for a week, his whole mantra of I'm going to coach not to lose, and I'm actually going to try and win a couple games here.
Well, and here's the other thing. And by the way, I forgot to mention the most important people in the room or on the air or on the podcast. Our sponsor, Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com for the best surprise you know is coming. Be sure and check them out on the web. Again, lootcrate.com. The last piece of it.
I thought you were going to say Dan Mott and Eric at home, but Loot Crate is awesome too.
Yeah, they're the second most important. They don't pay my bills.
Our producer and our colleague, Eric.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Loot Crate pays their bills too. So let's give lootcrate.com another shout out there. Arthur is right, though. Dan Mott is our producer and engineer extraordinaire, gets all of our digital content up with us, gets all of our TV work, all of our radio and electronic broadcast work, and Dan does a great job. Eric Edholm, of course, our senior editor. He'll be up next with Arthur on our Pro Football Weekly NFL podcast. But we're staying with the Bears for just a moment. And one more thought on this subject before we move on to some of the good stuff that happened last weekend and some of the promising signs we see on this roster is, let's not forget, Ryan Pace. Nobody assumes that Ryan Pace is in trouble. You know, I mean, the team does seem to be improving talent-wise. His drafting is looking fairly good, at least his second and third drafts. It's pretty much universally accepted. Now, I happen to have this from inside sources, that I believe the McCaskey family is completely happy with him at this point. He's going nowhere. But even beyond that, just the perception is that Ryan Pace has got one more move in the honeymoon. Young GMs normally do get a second crack at a head coach hiring, particularly with the perception that Fox was not his first choice. Nobody has ever proven that or knows it to be true. He wasn't forced on him. I know that. I know that Ryan Pace has been happy working with John Fox, but he appears to be safe right now. If he brings John Fox back and things don't get better next year, then he's probably in as much jeopardy as John Fox. Now, I happen to think the world of Ryan Pace is a human being, as an individual, in terms of integrity and character. I don't think he'd make the decision for that reason. But as we analyze it, we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't point out that angle of it as well.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a great point, and we've mentioned it before. Ryan Pace probably doesn't make the move up for Mitch Trubisky without either some type of assurance or at least kind of the green light from ownership. It's a franchise-altering move, and I'm guessing that the McCaskies had to be on board for that, and it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense then to trust Pace to identify the potential quarterback of the future and then ship him out after things don't go right out of the gate. But it's a good segue, Hub, because the big takeaway, of course, from that route, the Bears' best win of the season in Cincinnati, we're not going to spend a ton of time looking back because we're already coming up on week 15 in the Lions, but it certainly made Ryan Pace look a little bit better to have his rookies balling out like that, to have Jordan Howard setting records for this long storied charter franchise, and someone needed to kind of have some confidence building, and it looks like it is in fact going to come from that Ryan Pace draft class late in the season, and then some of the second year players who are starting to really show out as well.
One quick point here, and I'm going to get to what you're talking about. I'm going to disagree with you just a little bit on one thing. They say perception is reality. Bears Nation's perception of the McCaskey family is not reality. People don't understand how these folks work. I've gotten to know the family well. I was in the broadcast booth for 20 years and have a good relationship with them. Under Michael McCaskey, what you said might have been correct. Under George McCaskey, I don't think that's the case. I don't think Ryan Pace, he may have talked to George McCaskey around the office, but he didn't go to him for approval to do what he did with Mitch Trubisky. That's not the way George works. Now, Ted Phillips, that we don't know, okay? Mm-hmm. Phillips allegedly has removed himself from the football process. He would have meddled and been involved in something like that a few years
ago. Let me reword it. You're right. I don't want to convey it as Ryan Pace needs to have his hand held for the biggest team building decisions either. So remove that part of it, but what sense would it make? Maybe it's a better way of putting it. If he's the guy you entrusted to find the quarterback, it's not good optics and it's not good management to just ship him out right away.
Your point is absolutely correct. Yeah. A guy does not make a move like that if he doesn't have some comfort and security in his position. I just wanted to add the part, though, because people talk. I get these calls on the radio all the time and it's frustrating because it's just not true. George McCaskey does not meddle. Virginia McCaskey does not meddle. Mm-hmm. They get reports, they offer opinions, but they let their people do their jobs. It's one of the positive things they do. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out well because they haven't always hired the right people.
Right.
But that's the way they run the organization. But, you know, Arthur, I think you were making an important transition there because this is one of the reasons that even a lot of, I think the majority probably of Bears fans are fairly comfortable with Ryan Pace, is that more than, not more than less, but the majority of his personnel moves appear to be starting to pay some dividends,
right.
You know, and people want to jump on him for free agency. And I mean, I the Antrel role and Quinton Demp signings, I didn't like the minute he made them. You know, with Mike Glennon, I didn't know any more than most folks, but the people I was talking to assured me that there were at least four or five NFL teams that had the same idea about Glennon as Ryan Pace did. What I was curious about is I believe they knew they were going for Trubisky at the time. And in that case, why not just keep Cutler around for another year? It would have cost you less money. But the point is, okay, so those are a few moves that didn't work out so well. Even the Pernell McPhee move, they should have had better research on the medical. But you look at these last couple drafts, you look at some of the young free agents like Akeem Hicks and Danny Trevathan, who are very much a part of the future of this football team. Bobby Massey has developed into a serviceable right tackle, not a great one. You know, I think that the arrow is pointing up on Ryan Pace, the evaluator, at least coming out of that Cincinnati game and seeing even Jordan Howard hasn't reached his ceiling yet, you know, and you see what Trubisky is doing, and you know he's a long way from his ceiling, and now you start to imagine what you can do with Cone and Shaheen and Jackson and even, you know, Craven LeBlanc is a kid we don't talk about a lot who impresses me a great deal at the nickel, and then you got Kwiatkowski, you know, the way he's playing at linebacker. I don't think Jarrell Freeman's going to be back. Now, that was one that didn't work out, okay, but they didn't overpay for any of these guys. So I think what we saw in Cincinnati was kind of a little bit of a portending of the future of what Ryan Pace's image of this football team may look like.
Yeah, I think so too, mainly because it was those rookies that you referred to, Tariq Cohn getting more involved, Adam Shaheen having his best game, and finally being on the field in some big moments when he needed to be. We're still going to, our opinions are totally split on the pro personnel side because I think Pace needs a ton of work there, and you kind of gloss over some of the other signings that aren't looking so good right now, and Deion Sims and Marcus Cooper and some of the other big guaranteed money that was spent after Mike Glennon. But no one's going to bat 1,000 in the draft or free agency, and I think maybe by potentially altering his approach. I mean, that's the thing is once you start to feel better about this roster, you're going to start valuing quality over quantity, sort of what Ryan Pace has been forced into because there have been so many holes to fill. And then, I don't know, maybe some of the free agent signings are going to look a little bit better. But just what matters at this point, and we've said it on the podcast, is Mitch Trubisky's growth. And Mitch Trubisky's in the best two-game stretch of his NFL career, and it's not a coincidence that they're starting to loosen the reins a little bit, that we saw him moving more in and out of the pocket Sunday because of Dowell Loggins, and that you see this rapport developing with Adam Shaheen. I know the numbers still don't jump out at anyone, but you see his progress in front of our eyes almost on a weekly basis, and he's a guy I'm starting to actually get really excited about and what he can do in this offense.
Yeah, we don't necessarily disagree. You left out Marcus Wheaton, which is looking like one of the shakiest signings. Yeah. You know, but I think what people need to look at there, if you want to actually be doing hardcore NFL analysis, is not just that he signed those players, but what he paid for them. None of them broke the bank. There haven't been any stupid salary cap bending decisions. You know, some of these guys, it's just about getting them healthy. I don't really agree on Deion Sims. I think he's been exactly what they thought he was going to be. He was more a blocker than a receiver in Miami, and that's what he's going to be. And
Anyone pay $10 million guaranteed for a strictly Y tight end in the year 2017 when you also spent your second best draft pick on Adam Shaheen, who you also think can be that guy?
Yeah, well, A, I'm not sure they know that Shaheen can be that guy. B, they want at least two tight ends and what they were going to do, you know, with Dowell Loggins. Anybody else who comes in is going to want two tight ends. But the real point, Arthur, is $10 million guaranteed for a guy who's going to be your starting tight end for 3 years is not a lot of money these days in the NFL. That's exactly the point I'm going after here. So, you know, they wanted stability there. They hoped that he would emerge more as a receiver. We're agreeing and debating what we're agreeing on here. I'm just saying with Sims, I'd hold off on that one because, A, we don't know what the mysterious illness that sat him down for 4 weeks was, which obviously has had some impact there too. But trying to get back to the point.
And a key point in there, just before you go on, is the structure of these contracts is huge. That if you're going to be able to get out from some of them after 1 year, and of course Mike Glennon is the classic example, well, then you are not tying your hands the way that Phil Emery did with Jay Cutler in the way that the Ryan Pace regime began.
Exactly. And I've said this 1,000 times. I will say it 1,000,000 more. For what they do, I believe every NFL player should get every penny that they can. I will never fault a player for getting big money. And when it comes to what these teams pay, as long as they don't handcuff themselves with their salary cap, which Pace so far has been excellent at, I don't really care how much money the McCaskies spend. I mean, they're making a fortune. I do want to see them pay the money to the players. So I think when fans get caught up in that conversation, they're doing themselves a disservice because it doesn't have a lot to do with whether your team is going to win or lose. And so to try and focus on that piece of it, obviously at 4-9, they haven't won enough. And clearly, people, don't get too excited about what happened in Cincinnati because, A, it was a bad team going in, and, B, that bad team was missing 5 or 6 of their most important people. But just seeing the youngsters perform in a real game at full NFL speed and do the things they did, it was a sign of progress. And that's what this season was always going to be about. And this was really the last of those seasons, Arthur. When Pace got here, we knew it was a 4 or 5 year deal. At the end of 3 years, you wanted to be ready to look at year 4 and say, can we contend for a playoff spot? And you know, I don't want to get too high on the Kool-Aid, but I look at this roster right now. I have been pleasantly surprised by Trubisky. He has shown me more than I expected to see. I look at the weaknesses on the coaching side, and to me, if they can make coaching hires similar to what the Rams made last year, I don't see that roster being all that different from the way I saw the Rams roster last year. You don't have an Aaron Donald, I admit that, but you may have more playmakers on offense in Akeem Hicks and Danny Trevathan, and if you bring back Kyle Fuller, you do have pieces to build around on defense at each level too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Since we love the Rams and Eagles parallels so much, and because they make so much sense, that's why we do enjoy them. We also need to point out that Sean McVay and Les Snead did a masterful job surrounding Jared Goff, from the left tackle and Andrew Whitworth to bringing in Robert Woods, who no one thought could do what he's done coming out of Buffalo, to Sammy Watkins has come on strong, to those draft picks that the Bears may have had a shot at if they didn't have to be so aggressive for Trubisky and some of the other, you know, in going and getting Shaheen, who I said I'm very excited about, but Cooper Kupp and and maybe even Josh Reynolds look like players too there. So, yes, it's exciting that Adam Shaheen and Tariq Cohen had such big games and have flashed, but Trubisky's going to need help on the outside, certainly. Is someone like Davante Adams a possibility if Bears fans want to start doing scouting on the pro personnel side in some bigger games this weekend? Take a look at Davante Adams going into Carolina. Take a look at maybe someone like Malcolm Butler trying to cover Antonio Brown. That's going to be fun, and those are two needs we know are going to be high up on the list.
I'll tell you the guy I would absolutely overpay for if he's allowed to hit the market, and I don't know that he will be, is Jarvis Landry. You know, they've got big deals with Kenny Stills and Devontae Parker. And they're loath to pay him in Miami.
You love Landry. You've got to watch him on the sideline a couple times over the past few years. He always shows out when Hub is doing the Westwood One sidelines.
I actually spent about 10 minutes with him on the field after the game in the postgame interview Monday night. But here's the thing, Arthur, forget my opinion. Jarvis Landry now holds the NFL record for most receptions by any receiver in the history of the game in his first 2 years in the league, his first 3 years in the league, and he blew by the record for 4 years, week 10. He is the most productive receiver in the history of the National Football League in terms of receptions.
He may be playing his way. I suspect that you're right and that he is going to remain in Miami because they're realizing what they have, but it seems like he may be playing his way into sticking into South Beach, and Devontae Parker may soon join this Kevin White. And they're different reasons. Yeah. Parker's had more chances to show what he can do, but, man, he's been pretty disappointing. I know this isn't a Dolphins podcast, but these things all kind of spin off each other.
It's a great point, though, because Parker does nothing for me, and he's played. You know, Kevin White, you've got to, at least there's some mystery around it. But, for decades, drafting wide receivers in the first round has been a real risk. And that's why, as I look at what the Bears have to do at the position next, everybody's saying, oh, they got to draft a receiver. I don't agree. I'd look in the middle rounds. You know, I'm intrigued by Adam Shaheen. I still would have taken Juju Smith-Schuster. And I said it last year, said it coming up to the pick. And so you can look in the second, you can look in the fourth, you can look in the fifth. But again, this is something we shouldn't really be challenging Ryan Pace on, because look at what he's done in the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds. He's done really well so far.
Just a couple minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, and Juju's a great round two example. Cooper Kupp, I believe, round four, and D.D. Westbrook, round four, too. Go to ProFootballWeekly.com to check out Hub's column on the two favorites for the MVP at this point, with Carson Wentz out of the equation. Yeah, one of them is a sixth-round wide receiver from the MAC. So, yes, it's still the exception to the rule and not the rule. But we, as Hub said, you've seen Ryan Pace have an ability to find some values at skill spots in the later round. So that's something to keep in mind for sure. Hub, one thing we haven't hit on, again, we only have a couple minutes here, and maybe this isn't the right time to segue into it, but there hasn't been a lot of talk about if there's going to be a coaching change, whether that can potentially take Trubisky's development in the wrong direction just because you've been in one system. We both have been adamant we don't like the system and we don't love the teaching, but I don't think it's something that should be ignored because there, you know, it's not always linear and you have to take a step back if that's what's going to be happening.
Real quick point for you. I did the game last Monday night with Kevin Harlan and Kurt Warner, and after the game we were killing a couple oat sodas and knocking things around, and Chris Collinsworth made the comment during that phenomenal 39-38 Steeler
Ravens game
Sunday night that a wide receiver had never won the MVP.
Once he has, believe.
Kurt Warner, who you would think would know a little bit about this, says that was silly. That's not true. Of course they have. And Harlan, who is the voice of the NFL on the radio, says, "Oh yeah, must." Nope. Jerry Rice never won it. Wide receiver has never won an MVP award.
I thought Rice had won in 1987. He had 22 touchdowns. I was just looking at this.
No, John Elway was the MVP that year.
Oh,
we were too. Okay. Yeah, we thought that can't be right, but it is true.
Interesting.
And it's funny because initially I was going to vote for Tom Brady over Antonio Brown, but now I'm going to vote for Antonio. Oh, I can't say that. I just realized I'm not supposed to say who I'm voting for.
The point I was getting to, I think we should just use as a tease, because again, we've only got a couple minutes left, and I think it's worth kind of digging into a little bit. So maybe we'll kind of hold off.
Well, no, let me quickly. I don't want to ignore your point. Here's why I'm not worried about you. You make a great point. I mean, we always talk about these quarterbacks. Jay Cutler had 7 offensive coordinators in 8 years.
Find a good one? Is that what you're going to say?
Well, obviously that's the key. But beyond that, here's why I don't worry about it so much with Trubisky. He is still a piece of clay.
Yeah.
It's a guy who only had 13 games in the NFL. This has been more about mechanics and technique, working with Dave Ragone and Dowell Loggins. And it's not like Loggins has ingrained things in his brain that he has to be deprogrammed or anything like that. I mean, he hasn't been given the scheme to work with. I hear good things about Dave Ragone, quite frankly, and I wouldn't have a problem if he was back as the quarterback coach if they had an offensive coordinator with the innovative mind of a Sean McVay, of a Kyle Shanahan, of a Pat Shurmur. People don't talk about Pat Shurmur. The Minnesota Vikings aren't just getting by. They're the fifth-ranked offense in the NFL. He's done a really nice job up there. So there's plenty of good offensive coordinators out there. To me, that's the key for Mitch Trubisky going forward is get the right guy.
You know, for the same reason that Pat Shurmur, people in the know are talking about him, you know, casual fans, he's going to get another chance. I don't know whether it's this offseason, but there's one coming. And the reason, first and foremost, for that is the adaptability he has shown with his quarterbacks. Something to keep an eye on in Philadelphia now with the Eagles going to Nick Foles. If that's a seamless transition, who do you think is going to get a lot of the accolades after Nick Foles? It's going to be Frank Reich and John DeFilippo, and it would be another strong resume builder. I'm not predicting it, but that's something to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, the only issue you've got with those two guys, and this is huge with GMs when they interview, is that neither Reich or DeFilippo is calling plays. Shurmur is calling plays. And that's you look in Los Angeles, Matt LaFleur is not calling plays. I was actually told by a really good source that LaFleur and McVay are close enough that if LaFleur doesn't get a head coaching job but is offered another offensive coordinator job where he could call plays, that McVay thinks enough of him that he would let him go. You know, to keep that from holding him back. He's 38, which is not old, but when you look at McVay at 31, Jim Bob Cooter at 33, you get to be 38, 39, you're not calling plays. I think DeFilippo's even older than that. It becomes a bit of a hindrance to getting an offensive coordinator job.
I think DeFilippo did it for 1 year in Cleveland, right?
Yeah, and Loggins, you know, had basically a half a year, not even a full year, mm-hmm. you know, but what you're really looking for, a guy who's got a couple of those years on his resume, which McVay had.
All right, so we're about out of time on the Pro Football Week of Chicago podcast. He's Hub. I am Arthur. A big thank you to Dan Mott, our producer, to Eric at home for being so patient to wait to tape our next podcast, to Loot Crate, our awesome sponsor. Go to iTunes and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Subscribe to all of our podcasts and leave us a rating and a review while you're there. Hub, just on the way out, we're not really breaking down Bears Lions today. We don't have time, but why don't you tell our listeners what you just said on the TV show. It sounds like you really think this one could go either way.
Well, first of all, the Bears and Lions match up well. We've seen that in these Bears-Lions games the last couple of years. But beyond that, and I don't think I'm giving away any trade secrets here, we record late on Thursday, so we don't have the last-minute information. But the entire Lions offensive line has been on the injury list all week long. It's a rebuilt offensive line that has been better this year, but not great. We know that they don't have a running game even when that offensive line is healthy. There's a lot of things that play to the Bears' advantage here. And if they were to get some momentum coming out of Cincinnati last week, this game's a coin toss to me. I can make all kinds of arguments for the Bears to win, and the only thing that keeps me from picking them is whenever I pick them in an upset, they get blown out by 3 touchdowns, and I don't want to be responsible for that.
Is Howard Jones still on the active roster? Could this be the Howard Jones game?
He may be in the active roster, but I don't think he's going to get enough. And by the way, something else, we were talking about this, I don't know if it was in this podcast or it was on the TV show, but I wanted to make a point with you because you talked about Nick Kwiatkowski being more the future than Christian Jones, mm-hmm. and we saw last week when Trevathan was back. Vic Fangio talked about that on Wednesday, and the reason Kwiatkowski got the snaps is because Jones was playing outside. Because they had Jones in the game plan as an outside linebacker all week long. So it's not a knock on Kwiatkowski, but okay. They like them both. They really like them both a lot.
Interesting.
And I think it would be and because of that versatility with Jones, he becomes a key guy to look at when they try and decide to re-sign him or not.
If there's any team in the NFL that should know the importance of building up strong depth at this point, it has to be the Bears. They should definitely try and bring back Christian Jones as well, and he's been a good special teams player. He has shown the ability to – he's very coachable, clearly, I think he's a guy they want to keep around.
And it's ironic because we went back and checked our scouting reports when he was coming out 4 years ago. I think it was Florida State, and everybody knew he was a first- or second-round athlete or talent. The scouting reports were about – attitude, character, perception, learning. Can he be coached? He's he's proven to be all of
he's
that.
He's beloved there A-plus, in that locker room.
Absolute A-plus. Yep. So hopefully he'll be a Chicago Bear going forward. I'd like to see Fuller back as well. We'll talk more about that next week and in the coming weeks as we get to that part of the season. Right now, we've got to say goodbye with this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly Chicago. Again, our thanks to Loot Crate, lootcrate.com. The best surprise you know is coming. Our title sponsor of our podcast, Dan Mott. Great work as always. Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkush will also have the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Go to iTunes, subscribe, give us a good review if you can, and we will be back with you next week with more Pro Football Weekly Chicago.